Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today is Thursday, February 15th, 2024. We have four cases on our calendar today. This is a second of four on that we have set. This is A23-1178 in the matter of the appeal of rate calculation for community university healthcare center. Counsel for both parties, you'll have 15 minutes initially for your oral arguments, and then counsel for appellant, you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you so choose. The podium can be lifted up and down. There's a button underneath, and you can also adjust the microphone as well. It is being recorded, so please make sure that you have the microphone so we can hear your presentation. And with that, counsel for, and also I forgot to mention, we also have it recorded, and that recording will be available within the next day or two if you want to go back to listen to it. With that, counsel for appellant, you may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Kathy Galati, appearing here on behalf of the appellant Community University Healthcare Center. I'll be referring to them as COOC. And joining me here today is Lisa Bean. COOC is here, may it please the court, COOC is here today because for at least 15 years in a row, DHS included COOC's costs of mental health targeted case management services in COOC's Medicaid per visit rate calculation. We maintain that 15-year history was correct because as a federally qualified health center, or FQHC, COOC is supposed to receive a Medicaid rate that is calculated to include all of COOC's allowable costs of providing services, a cost-based rate that accounts for all allowable costs. Mental health targeted case management services are patient care costs, and they're FQHC costs that are allowable. They count as allowable. DHS's decision to exclude the cost of mental health targeted case management costs from COOC's Medicaid per visit rate calculation was wrong for at least three reasons. The first reason is DHS misread Minnesota Statute Subdivision, Minnesota Statutes 256B.0625 Subdivision 30. Subdivision 30 directly addresses the FQHC rate calculation and requires the inclusion of these mental health targeted case management costs as allowable costs. Second reason is that DHS relied on an inapplicable provision of the same Minnesota statute, this time Subdivision 20, that has nothing to do with the FQHC cost rate calculation whatsoever. And third, DHS relied on an incorrect legal analysis to do an about-face and exclude mental health targeted case management services from COOC's rate calculation halfway through 2021. COOC made certain business decisions based on its expectation that DHS would calculate COOC's rate 2021 rate consistent with DHS's longstanding practice. Instead, DHS retroactively applied the new rate calculation to COOC, which was fundamentally unfair. So what we're trying to do here is to hold DHS to what they said they were going to do in Subdivision 30, which is also inconsistent with the APM, which is also consistent with the APM 4 description in the Medicaid state plan with the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services with CMS. DHS's actions result in a lower reimbursement rate to COOC for every Medicaid-covered service that it provides. These errors of law warrant reversal of DHS's exclusion of these costs from COOC's 2021 Medicaid rate calculation. We ask that the court to direct DHS to recalculate COOC's rate with these costs included. So I can turn now to the first reason why DHS's decision is wrong, and that involves looking at the plain language of Subdivision 30. Subdivision 30, subsection L3, defines allowable costs to include direct patient care costs and patient-related support services. The mental health targeted case management costs at issue are such direct patient care costs and patient-related supported services. Second, subsection L3 also lists certain unallowable costs. Mental health targeted case management costs are not listed in that itemization of unallowable costs.
That is true, but the language in there does say including but not limited to.
Yes, it does, Your Honor.
That language generally indicates that it's a non-exclusive list.
Yes, Your Honor. That would be the indication. However, I'll say two things about that. First, if you take a look at the list in the list of non-allowable cost items in L3, those are all administrative-type costs. They're all, you'll see references to fines, the cost of gifts, alcohol, lobbying expenses. Those are all administrative costs.
What about social services? Why isn't that akin to mental health case management?
Those are a different type of service. Let me take a look at that.
The first one, it says social services and administrative costs.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, general social services and administrative costs, those would not indicate direct patient care costs. That mental health targeted case management costs are direct patient care costs. They involve meeting with the patient, arranging for their enabling services, making sure that they stay in the system.
How is that different from what social workers do and for general social services?
I don't think that the subdivision, this reference refers to social, the work of social licensed clinical social workers. That would be covered as a direct patient care cost. Social services might relate to perhaps helping a client obtain housing or something unrelated to direct patient care. We're talking about behavioral health services that keep people with persistent and severe mental illness out of the emergency room, out of requiring more expensive care. So the first, even though it does say including but not limited to, we would say that a direct patient care services of mental health targeted case management costs don't bear any resemblance to the L3 items in subdivision L3 of non-allowable costs. We would also say that if DHS sought to amend the list in L3, it could do so by following the process in subdivision L4, and it hasn't done so, and that's why the administrative law judge below determined that DHS had actually exceeded its statutory authority under subdivision L3 when it characterized these costs, the mental health targeted case management costs, as not allowable.
Didn't Cook only challenge its initial 2021 APM4 rate calculation? Does the statutory process apply under the specific circumstances in this case, given the specific challenge that Cook made?
What I'm saying is that if the state sought to amend subsection L3, which it has not done so, there is a process for that.
But doesn't your argument imply that because the state didn't follow the process, the state wasn't allowed to consider this a non-allowable cost? Am I understanding that correctly?
Yes, that it's not itemized.
But the state wasn't required to follow that process because of the particular challenge that Cook made. And the timing of when, if I get this term right, rebasing occurs. Am I misunderstanding that?
So that relates to an argument that DHS made that the L4 process only comes into play in the rebasing time period in between the APM4 rate calculation and some other activities. I would contend that that's not correct. That there is a process here for DHS to have amended this list. The fact is that the list does enumerate these non-allowable costs, and those are the costs that would only be carved out under the APM4 rate calculation. So,
and I understand your position that there is a process, but my question for you is, your position that DHS was required to use that process in order to find that these specific services, or to come to the conclusion that these specific services were not allowable?
Yep, because COOC should be allowed to, as part of the APM4 rate calculation, COOC should be permitted to rely on the list as stated, and those mental health targeted case management services aren't in the L3 list at the time that the APM4 was developed and described, and those services also are not carved out under the APM4 description in the Medicaid state plan. So there's no reason for COOC to have thought that those services would be carved out, and if DHS had wanted to exclude them, it could do so prospectively as part of the L4 process. And it would also have to seek to amend the state Medicaid state plan that it has with CMS, because under APM4, that these costs are also allowable, because there's a reference to the same reference to direct patient care costs and related support services.
So you don't argue that the DHS is able to exclude those costs? You're just concerned about the process?
That's right, Your Honor. So we're not saying that, if DHS feels that they had made a mistake here, and we don't agree that there is a mistake. We think that the 15 years of the way that they've been doing it is actually correct. But if DHS wants to add these costs to the list of non-allowable items, it's going to have to do at least two things. One is amend the Medicaid state plan and its description of APM4 to specify that these costs are non-allowable, because as written, APM4 does acknowledge that direct patient care costs and patient-related support services costs are allowable costs, and that Medicare cost principles will also apply. APM4 is in alignment with Subdivision 30 here as written. So the state would have to seek leave to amend the state plan and get CMS to approve it. And the second thing that the state would have to do is to go through the L4 process and add these costs to the non-allowable costs in L3. We're not saying that they can't do that or start that process, but they haven't done that yet. And if they would do that, any change that they make should have prospective application. It shouldn't affect the 2021 rate calculation. The mental health targeted case management costs are also allowable costs, because mental health targeted case management services are covered services in the Medicaid state plan. So the second reason why DHS's decision is erroneous is that DHS relied on Subdivision 20, which has nothing to do with FQHC costs and the Medicaid rate calculation. Subdivision 20 is about how mental health targeted case management services are going to be paid by the state and the county, and the timing for such payments. This case is not about those payments. This case is about what goes into the FQHC rate calculation, kind of the ingredients for the rate calculation, what's allowable, what's not allowable. And both Subdivision 30 and the Medicaid state plan's description of APM4 tells us what costs to include. And then the third consideration for your court.
And under Subdivision 30, where does it specifically say that mental health services are part of what's included in the rate calculation?
There's a couple ways to get to that. So Subdivision 30A references the federal definition of FQHC services. And so Subdivision 30A and the federal definition of FQHC services are aligned. That definition is found in 42 U.S.C. 1396D A2C, which refers to FQHC core services that are described in DL2, as well as any other ambulatory service that an FQHC provides, and that's referenced in the Medicaid state plan. So that's one way. So Subdivision 31, that's one way that these services are allowable. The other reference is to Subdivision L3, I believe, which addresses Medicare cost principles, as well as direct patient care costs and the patient-related support services. So we would contend that although, yes, if Your Honor were to look at Subdivision 30, you're not going to see a specific reference to mental health targeted case management services.
Right.
That is correct. However, Subdivision 30 gets you there with its definition of FQHC services, which incorporates the federal definition, as well as the fact that these costs are allowable in L3 and L5.
So looking at L3, is there any interplay between the preemption issues that were dealt with and the idea that the commissioner shall reimburse the FQHCs in accordance with the current applicable Medicare cost principles that supports your argument, or is there an issue there where are you essentially arguing that DHS did not have the discretion to make this a non-allowable cost because under current applicable Medicare cost principles, these particular types of services are allowable?
I would agree with everything you said. However, Your Honor, I don't think it's an issue of preemption. I think you can read Subdivision 30 and its incorporation of the Medicare cost principles in alignment with the federal Medicare cost principles. They all will lead you to the conclusion that these are covered services. The Medicare cost principles are actually, in support the principle that general operating costs, direct patient care costs, are allowable costs. And the same kind of, bad debt, taxes, fines, penalties, the costs of gifts and, other items that, those are not allowable. That's L3 and the federal standards, echo the same.
May I ask one follow-up?
Yes.
So I just want to be sure I understand, though. So if we agree with that argument, that specific argument you're making, then is there really any way for the commissioner or for DHS to use L4 to make this a non-allowable cost? Because under current applicable Medicare cost principles, this is an allowable cost. And wouldn't that prohibit the commissioner or DHS from ever making these particular types of services a non-allowable cost?
They would have to modify the language in Subdivision L3 and L5 that incorporates the reference to Medicare cost principles and say something about, with the exception of mental health targeted case management services. It should be made explicit. And so if that's what Your Honor means by preemption, I would agree with that.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel. And you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Counsel for respondent, you will have 15 minutes. Please state your name for the record and the party you're representing.
Good morning, Your Honors. Emily Anderson, Assistant Attorney General on behalf of the Department of Human Services today, and may it please the Court. DHS's calculation of the APM 4 rate for COOC should be affirmed for two main reasons. First, because that rate meets federal and state laws' requirements for an APM rate. Second, because recalculating a rate to comply with state law is not arbitrary or capricious. On the other hand, COOC is asking for this court to hold that its costs for services that COOC is only allowed to bill Medicaid for because it contracts on behalf of Hennepin County must be factored into a totally separate rate for services outside of that contract. That is not the law, and COOC's argument should be rejected. I want to start with the federal and state law that govern the alternative payment methodology, or APM, rate. First, again, federal law, we're talking about that 1396A-BB area. The default rate that FQHCs are entitled to under the Federal Medicaid Act is something called a PPS rate. The calculation for that is very specifically set forth in 2 and 3 under BB. But under BB 6, states are free to, although are not required to, develop a payment methodology that is different than PPS in an alternative to that.
So, why did it take 15 years to figure this out?
I would say there was a longstanding principle that they did this, or not a principle, a longstanding practice, partly because Cook is the only FQHC that provides MHTCM on behalf of a county in the whole state. So it's a bit of an anomaly. It slipped under the radar for a while. This was brought to DHS's...
For 15 years.
The change was made in connection with APM4. The first year that APM4 was used was 2021. It was brought to DHS's attention before that, and it was something that it was in communication with Cook and CMS about for a couple of years leading up to the actual rate recalculation. Because APM4 was a brand new rate and it coincided with the whole design, they decided to do it prospectively starting with that rate.
So why didn't DHS use the process that
Because as per Judge Edie's discussion with Ms. Galati earlier, L4 does not apply in between rebracings. Like I said, 2021 is the first APM4 use. That update list in L4 happens every 2 years. APM4 is going to be rebased. We are in the middle of it right now. L4 applies between rebasings, between those 2 year things. It does not apply for the 2021 calculation.
Why not? Where in either L3 or L4 of subdivision 30 does it state that the list of 17 non-allowable costs? It seems to be an issue of procedural due process.
Sure.
From my perspective, speaking only for myself, that you would want to put parties on notice that, okay, you are aware there's this non-exclusive list here, but we're going to add something to it. Let's have notice. Let's have input, feedback before that's added to it.
Two responses to that, Your Honor. The first is, prior to this rate setting, DHS did exactly that with Cook, and that's in the record at, I believe it's RDoC 24.
But it didn't do it in this instance with this rate change.
It did. In 2019 and 2020, I think that's Exhibit L to the large statement of facts declaration that Cook submitted to OAH. There are concerns starting in 2019 and discussions with Cook starting in 2020, well before the rate setting, that MHTCM were going to be allowed. And
that's different than having following the process of providing broad notice, including to Cook.
So,
and other parties.
Yeah, my second answer to that is that L4 says not that the list in statute in L3 needs to be updated. That would, of course, not be something DHS can do unilaterally. That's a legislative change. It says that it needs to be updated in the Minnesota Healthcare Programs Manual. And the Minnesota Healthcare Programs Manual, at the time that this rate calculation went into effect, did say MHTCM are county-provided services, and counties and their contractors must negotiate for a rate that is billed monthly. So the healthcare programs manual was updated to say how DHS planned to treat MHTCM going forward.
Does the healthcare programs manual contain non-allowable costs that aren't contained in L3?
Yeah, we would say MHTCM is one of those that's not explicitly contained in L3.
But other non-allowable costs in addition to MHTCM?
I don't have that on the tip of my fingers. If that is dispositive to Your Honor, I am happy to submit supplemental information about it.
Well, I ask because your counterpart's argument seems to rely on the fact that MHTCM is, in their view, not like the list in L3, and it's not one of those costs, but it's interesting to me because if there's this additional list that has a number of other non-allowable costs on it that aren't included in the statute, I would think that would tend to support your argument that this is a non-exclusive, non-exhaustive list.
Sure. I would say, as we discussed earlier with Ms. Galati, it specifically says it's a non-exclusive list, and the way that this court does both statutory interpretation and sort of reading generally is that you look at the whole of a thing, not specific provisions. And the 0625 statute that we're looking at, it is titled covered services. So that the whole subsection taken together, 0625, is how services are covered under Minnesota's Medicaid provisions. So you can't read subdivision 30 without also reading subdivision 20, which comes first and says, again, only counties or their contractors are allowed to bill for these services, and this is how they have to be billed. On a negotiated rate, that is paid monthly. MH Cook would not be entitled under the Minnesota Healthcare Programs manual or under statute or rule. They are not allowed to bill Medicaid for MHTCM at all unless they are doing it as a contractor for Hennepin County. So those services are within the contract. All their FQHC services, those are outside of the contract with Hennepin County. Those are reimbursable at this default FQHC rate because they are not subject to that.
Can I just pause for one moment? Because I want to take you back to something that counsel argued earlier, that in order for DHS to actually add MHTCM to the non-allowable cost list, there would actually have to be, as I understood her argument, a legislative amendment to the statute, to 30L3, to change the language in accordance with current applicable Medicare cost principles, with the exception of MHTCM. And also, I don't know that you could actually, because if you look at L4 says that in order to change the list under, you have to use the rebasing process or do it during the years between the rebasing process established in Clause 5, which, again, requires current applicable Medicare cost principles to be considered. So if MHTCM is an allowable cost under Medicare cost principles, is there actually a process under your counterpart's interpretation of the statute for DHS to ever add MHTCM to the non-allowable cost list?
Sure. I would back up a little bit and say that this kind of goes to the intersection between the Federal Medicaid Act and what the state can do. And that sort of gets into the federal law section for the APM, which does not actually have any requirements for, or it has, it says that the state can set its own rules as to how APM is paid and only sets two restrictions on that, and that is that payment must be higher than payment would be under the PPS rate. Cook doesn't argue that that's not the case here, and that Cook agrees to it. Again, no dispute here that Cook agreed, subject to this appeal, to be taken with the APM rate. Their discussion about Medicare cost principles and all costs being factored in, that's from the PPS rate, and they rejected the PPS rate.
Right, but I have a problem with that. Here's my concern with that. So when you calculate the PPS rate, correct me if I'm wrong, but the these acronyms are going to kill me. MHTCM.
You and everyone else, Judge.
It violates the TLA rule of three-letter acronyms. That's totally thrown off the record. So the MHTCM services are part of the calculation for the PPS, correct?
Going forward, DHS position is that they do not need to be because they anticipated, because of their longstanding conversations with Cook, that this was going to be an issue. For sort of argument's sake, they used MHTCM in the calculation of the PPS rate here. I don't believe DHS thinks that that is required or even appropriate because, again, MHTCM are only covered in the state plan as county-provided and county-contracted services, which is not the same as an FQHC-covered or provided service.
Okay, I appreciate the background, but still, the bottom line is here, the calculation for the PPS did include the MHTCM services, correct?
It did, yes.
Okay, but when DHS did the calculation for the alternative plan, it did not include them. And it's and the argument is, well, you're still getting more than you would have through the PPS.
Yes.
But isn't that an apples and oranges comparison? Because in one, you're including the mental health services, and the other, you're not.
So if I'm understanding your question right, it is apples and oranges because the federal Medicaid statute allows APM and PPS to be
apples and oranges. But the permissive versus the required language, the shall language under the PPS statute says that you shall provide this, but you may provide an alternative provided a couple of requirements that you met that are not dispute. But at the same time, if you're going to compare the rate of the rate calculation for the services to be provided with one very significant factor, one significant service in the PPS, but it's missing from the calculation from the APM one, that seems to be you're tipping the scales here, and it's not a fair comparison. It seems odd to not have that as part taken out of the APM calculation.
I suppose Whether it's fair or not is, whether it's fair or cost feasible from Cook's perspective is something they can speak to. I don't think that they would dispute, and I'm sure Ms. Galati will correct me if I'm wrong, that the APM rate as it is calculated without MHTCM and knowing that they won't get paid for MHTCM still far, far exceeds the
I understand
PPS
that. I understand that. It still exceeds the PPS, but it doesn't. It seems to be arbitrary to take out a particular cost and still say, well, you're still getting more than you would have through the PPS. You're just not getting as much as you would have for an essential service here that's provided to underserved communities.
Again, I would say, as far as it being an essential service, if it does not make sense for Cook feasibly to continue providing MHTCM under this, then there is nothing forcing them to continue providing them. Hennepin County is responsible and is required to continue providing MHTCM, whether or not it makes sense feasibly for Cook financially
right,
to
but
do
they have,
it.
They have a contract with them to work together to provide these services. And my concern with, I have actually two concerns here in the arguments today on the Subdivision 30L3 list. One concern is essentially was ALJ right by saying that DHS had no statutory authority to add to this. Isn't this really an issue of separation of powers, that if this is a non-exclusive list, the proper authority to add something to that list is actually the legislature, not DHS, or the courts or any other entity?
I don't think that's consistent with the language of the statute.
I understand that, and I agree with you that the language in the statute is non-exclusive. I agree with you on that point. My question is, who gets to add to that list? And I'm a little concerned that isn't that really the legislature that has authority, not the courts or not DHS or any other
entity? Not according to Subdivision L4. Assuming, arguendo, that L4 and this rebasing applies, again, we think the language takes it out because it says in between rebasings. This is the first rebasing and accordingly not in between. But even there, it says the commissioner shall update the list of non-allowable costs. The legislature has then specifically delegated the authority to make the non-allowable cost list
right,
to DHS.
But then that gets back to the procedural due process issue of shouldn't that process be followed before anything else is added to DHS?
The legislature didn't say that. The legislature said to do it within rebasings. And like I said, the Minnesota Healthcare Programs Manual, which is where the list is supposed to be published, where the commissioner is supposed to say, here's where everything is. That program manual says that entities under contract with counties who provide MHTCM are only going to get paid once a month for it, and you're only going to get paid the county contracted rate.
Would you agree that the MHTCM services are allowable costs under Medicare principles?
I don't think we do. That wasn't super...
You don't agree?
No. I don't believe because that was super thoroughly briefed, but what I was...
I was under the impression that was not in dispute.
We don't think that they're allowable, that they are... So we think that, as Ms. Galati said, there are core FQHC services. I don't think there's any dispute that
this is not a
core service.
And I'm just talking under the federal Medicare, not the state, because I think that...
Right.
But
so,
aren't those allowable services under the federal Medicare?
So... Under the Medicaid Act, only as to how they are described in the state plan, and here the state plan quite clearly says that MHTCM are only covered when provided
by a
county.
That's the state plan, though. I'm just asking about the federal.
So under federal Medicare cost principles, which are a little different than the federal Medicaid Act, but we'll go with it. Under Medicare cost principles, my understanding is that the Medicare prospective payment for FQHCs specifically excludes care management services, which are more like MHTCM than other things. And I think you can get the cite to that in 42 CFR 405.2464C. I can repeat that if you want. I know that.
I've got it.
Okay.
Yep.
I see I'm out of time, Your Honor, but...
Yes, Judge Ede has one more question.
Is it your position, that I understand this correctly, that even if... Applicable Medicare cost principles included MHTCM as an allowable cost, it doesn't matter because under the PPS, it is already contemplated that that would be covered, and it's up to Cook to decide whether they want to elect the PPS or APM4.
Yes, that's another reason, Your Honor. The all allowable cost language, as far as federal law is concerned, comes into the PPS, and the first language of the first word in the APM rate statute in BB6 says notwithstanding everything above, which means ignoring all that above, you can create your own payment rate. As long as it's in the state Medicaid plan, which this one is, you can create it in that state Medicaid plan, as long as APM payment is going to exceed PPS payment and the center agrees to it.
Well, I think with all due respect, I think you're reading the notwithstanding the above language a little too broadly. It's just saying notwithstanding the required PPS, you can enter into an alternative plan. I don't think it says, okay, we throw everything out, including the rate calculation, you can start from scratch, start from zero. That seems like an absurd result there.
I don't think it's an absurd result at all. I think that if the APM rate had to look exactly like the PPS rate, there wouldn't be much reason to have an APM rate. The APM rate is explicitly meant to be an alternative methodology to using the PPS rate. It's in the name. So it doesn't have to look like the PPS rate. And Minnesota's happens to share some characteristics, like that it is a per-encounter rate, that it's paid daily, that it does include some costs. BB6 doesn't require any of that. So as far as federal law is concerned, it could be, APM could be one monthly rate that FQHCs get paid for something. It doesn't have to be tied to these services. So as far as federal law is concerned, I don't think that's absurd at all. I think that's what it's created to do, is to allow states nimbleness and the ability to find a payment method that works for the centers in their state and that works for their state that doesn't necessarily mirror or look like the PPS rate.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Counsel for appellant, you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. A couple of points, unless there are specific questions. Judge Eads, you had a question about the provider manual and whether that had a reference to the Medicare cost principles. Indeed, it does. It's the record item 26, Exhibit X. There is a reference in the Medicare manual that DHS employs that says that cost reports will be used using Medicare cost principles.
So just to jump right onto that point, what do you make of counsel's argument that under 1396A(BB)(6), it starts with the language notwithstanding any other provision of this section? So why doesn't that preamble take out the concern about Medicare cost principles from APM?
Your Honor, this goes to something that, you know, we are actually very troubled by, and we believe that this court should also be troubled by, which is the representations that the APM can be anything that the DHS decides it to be, and says that federal law provides...
Well, anything except less than the PPS and something that you don't agree to, right?
But there's prefatory language to that, which says that the APM is supposed to apply to 1396D(A)(2)(C) services. So that means FQHC and other ambulatory services. And we would contend that mental health targeted case management services are such FQHC services. So before you even get to the two items in BB6, there's a kind of lead-up language in there that says that the APM methodology is supposed to cover FQHC and other ambulatory services, which include the mental health targeted case management services.
Okay. I want to follow up quick, though, on this L4 argument you made earlier. And as I understood, you were saying that the legislature would have to amend the state statute in order to add MHTCM to the non-allowable cost list. So first question on that, are you aware of whether or not there are non-allowable costs in the healthcare programs provider manual that aren't included in the statute?
No, I'm not aware. I think the statute and the provider manual are both reference Medicare cost principles.
But you would agree that the statute references the provider manual as the commissioner shall publish the list and any updates, and that seems to support your counterpart's argument that this is a non-exhaustive list that could be expanded in the manual.
If the process is followed, if the process in L4 is followed, which requires notice to the Minnesota Association of Community Health Centers, there would have to be a process that's followed.
Is that no matter what, though, even going through that process, they can never disregard Medicare cost principles, even for APM.
If they were going to do that, they should then provide for that in the Medicaid state plan description of APM-4, which also has a definition of incorporates Medicare cost principles, specifically refers to direct patient care costs and patient support services. There's a lot more that the state would have to do in order to add these services to the non-allowable list. I think it's to amend the state plan as well as amend subdivision 30. There was a reference earlier to the fact that, you know, the state made this change after 15 years in connection with the implementation of APM-4, but then I would submit to you all, your honors, why doesn't APM-4 reflect that change? There should be a reference in APM-4 to the exclusion of these carve-out costs. So, APM-4 was the first time that this was done, this carve out occurred, but there was no attempt to secure a revision to the APM-4 description in the Medicaid state plan, nor was there an attempt to revise subdivision 30. I do think it's important to also stress with respect to the subdivision 20, the DHS's position with respect to subdivision 20, there's a difference between the FQHC rate calculation, a rate for all of Medicaid covered services, and a difference and the payment that COOC receives from Hennepin County. They're two different things.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Council, for all your briefing, extensive briefing on this issue and the oral arguments as well. We appreciate that. We'll be issuing an opinion within the statutory time frame. Thank you all.